Hello and welcome to The Geek Embassy Reads. I'm your host, Regina McMenemy, and I'm here tonight with Dante, Evan, Isabella, and Crab, and we are talking about The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet by Becky Chambers. Yeah, which we have had very diverse reactions to.
Diverse is a very interesting way to put it.
Yes, it is. It's a little diplomatic.
It's what the book is all about anyway.
It is a little bit of what the book is all about. So, actually, Isabella, can you tell us a little bit about Becky Chambers? You were the one who brought this book up for us to read for this series. So can you tell us a little bit about it? About what you know?
I didn't prepare this part. I mostly just know of her from Twitter. A lot of librarian friends have recommended it to me, especially the good representation of queer romance in it.
Yeah.
I do know that she kickstarted it to get it published successfully a few years ago.
Nice. And but, now there's... No, I don't want to jump too far ahead because I didn't want to discuss this book, but there's a second book, right?
Yes.
Not exactly a sequel because it's a story about other characters that are sort of very minor, well, not minor characters, but are different characters in the book.
Is it called The Short Way to a Big Happy Planet?
No.
Because that would be hilarious.
It's called A Closed and Common Orbit.
Okay. And did she kickstart that one too?
I don't think so, because I think she got a publishing deal for the first
one. After the first one. Okay. Because that's what I was wondering about. Okay. Well, that's cool. Yeah. I've read Becky Chambers is a contributor to the Mary Sue, which I followed for years. Feminist blog, talks about pop culture and all kinds of stuff. In the post for this episode, I'll have a link to an interview with her about the book, which we've all looked at, which we might reference a little bit as kind of we're going through our discussion. So we have some questions that we've put together. I don't know. I don't really want to do a summary necessarily, but I think we should run really quickly just through who the characters are, because the story focuses on a flight crew in deep space in a dystopian future of sorts, although I know dystopian.
It's not really dystopian.
It's totally dystopian. It's just
future. It's like a post-dystopian future. Like, we had the dystopian future.
Yes.
And then this is what happened after that.
Yeah, they made it through to the end.
Right.
It's like Earth had a dystopian future, but the rest of the galaxy is doing just fine.
Right. Yeah. Earth was able to kind of hold it together, but, or not. Not hold it together. Yeah.
Humanity has survived.
Right. But not on
Earth. Yeah, that's a difference.
Where other species have not.
Right, because one of our characters, one of the sort of main characters, we get this story told in vignettes from different character points of view throughout the story. One of the main characters that we follow is Rosemary Harper, and she actually grew up on Mars. Right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes. That's where she came from.
Yep, born and raised on Mars. And...
So she's technically a Martian.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Just like Matt Damon.
Right.
Yeah,
I had to make that joke. It's okay. You didn't have to laugh. I'm laughing. It's fine.
It had to be said.
So, yes, she's a Martian, born and bred, and to the best of my knowledge, this is her first extended trip away from home, aboard the Wayfarer.
Yes.
At least it's her first extended trip that wasn't backed by some sort of other reason. Like, for school, she had done an internship apparently at one of, I don't know if it was an off-planetary internship, but it was this is, I think, her first long-haul, long-distance trip that she sort of made of her own volition, but was also kind of forced into through circumstances that weren't entirely up to her.
Right. She has some family sort of drama going on with her dad being in trouble.
she takes the cake with family drama.
It's a little less drama and more a little like, oh, your father's an international arms dealer.
War criminal.
Yeah. So she flees from that and changes her name so that she can start her life without being in the shadow of him. And a deep space ship is a good place, a good option for her, because likely nobody's going to know who she was or what she looks like.
Yep.
Nor do they care.
Yeah. Exactly. Because by that, you know, that point at that depth of space, it's not really as much of an issue as it would have been had she stayed in her social circles on Mars. Because I guess Mars is kind of like a wealthy planet, you'd say. Like
It was originally populated by the rich from Earth who were trying to escape the pollution and the crumbling of the human homeworld.
Okay.
So the Martians are descended from the people, the wealthy and well-to-do, who were able to get out before the Exodon fleet, who came in later, but took to the skies as opposed to Mars.
Right. So she's got a certain sort of class status associated with that and with being a Martian. So the crew is not made up of all humans.
Mm-hmm.
Which is cool.
Which is really cool.
It's mostly humans, but it's not entirely.
Right. It's mostly humans, but it's not entirely. There are a couple of different sort of very distinct races. But I guess let's run first through the humans that we do have. The captain is Ashby Santoso. See, I didn't listen. Everybody else listened to the book. Mm-hmm. I read it, which is why it took us so long to record it, because I'm a slow reader right now.
Yeah, you know, having a four-year-old will do that to you.
Having a four-year-old really does do that. So he is a captain. He is also human. We'll leave his more details about who he is later. Let's see. Who else are the humans?
Jenks, the computer tech aboard the Wayfarer, who is unusually small because reasons. Apparently humans are just kind of like born tiny now and have to be modified to
normal heights. On Earth, and he received no prenatal care, so I kind of assume that he was just like malnourished as a child and just didn't grow.
I assume dwarfism or something like that.
Yeah, either malnourished.
That's also possible, but it's not specified at all whether that's a thing.
The only thing really specified is that his mother didn't get any prenatal care, and that was one of the biggest reasons why.
Yes, also on an Earth without any help at all by a very xenophobic society. I didn't believe in technology, so.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
So the next one is Kizzy, who's easily the best character in this book.
I love Kizzy.
She's the mech. Hey, listen. This is my opinion, not yours.
That's all right. You can have your opinion.
I'm entitled to my incorrect opinions, and that's perfectly okay.
Okay.
So, Kizzy's the mech tech. I'm not quite sure what the difference is between the comp tech and the mech tech, but I'm sure, you know, Max, you can go ahead and give me like a 17-minute long diatribe on that. For those of you who haven't read this book, she's basically Kaylee from Firefly.
Yes.
Except 10 times more excitable and 1,000 times more adorable. She's pretty much just great. She keeps the ship running.
Yeah. She keeps it together whenever anything goes wrong.
Yep. Let me see here. And then we have Artis Corbin. He's the last human. He's an algaeist, because algae is super exciting. He is he's the crew malcontent. I was about to say like kind of a jerk. you don't need the kind of, he's just
a jerk.
think Logan, like in the movie Logan,
like never saw it.
But without claws. I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to the audience.
Okay.
So he's basically just a giant grumpy old man. Old man, like an old man personality,
right?
Where he basically just wants people to leave him alone, and he wants to do his work uninterrupted. And he's basically just a giant jerk and a waste of a character. Sorry, whoops. Anyways,
all of the other characters and all of the other personalities on the ship are different races of alien.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Species.
That's the word I was looking for. Sorry, it's late.
Of alien. Yes, we have Sissix, who is everybody else's favorite character in the book. She's the pilot for the Wayfarer. She is an Andrisk, which is this large Naga snake kind of alien, from what I recall of the description.
I thought she's more of a bird.
She's more of a reptilian. She's close.
She's kind of like a human-like dinosaur. She has feathers, like dinosaurs.
Just feathers, though. Like,
yeah. Like dinosaurs that. Did.
Right.
She's a velociraptor-type creature.
Think Argonian from the Elder Scrolls series, and you're sort of getting there.
Yeah, never played it, but I figured you were talking to the audience.
I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to the audience. Turnabout's fair play.
No, that's perfectly fine. Turnabout, that's also a great blue card. Anyways, we have Lovey/Lovelace. She's the AI of the ship, who has gained some sort of sentience and cultivated their own personality. We will talk about Lovey in depth much later. Very in depth later.
Yep.
Dr. Chef, who is also probably the best character in the book.
Yes, he's awesome.
See, he is a Grum, one of the last of his kind. They are a...
Currently male.
Yeah, I was trying to say, like, is hermaphroditic the right word?
I don't think so, because hermaphroditic means they have both at the same time.
Okay.
Single-gendered, but they, like...
They morph genders through, as they age. Like, they go through a process where they change from one. Well, actually, it's from, isn't it from one sex to the other?
From one sex to the other. They start gender. As female.
Right. Yeah, they start as female.
They all start as female, and they all grow to male.
Right.
In their maturity.
And then they become something that's neither here nor there.
Right.
That too.
Yeah.
Right. So, as you can probably tell from a title like Dr. Chef, he is both the doctor and the chef. Very self-explanatory. I really like these kinds of names. They just make me happy.
Yeah.
Let me see here. And then we have Ohan, the navigator of this wonderful ship. They are what's called a Cyanat pair. Okay. It is one individual being, but he is infected by something called the Whisperer virus, which this species goes ahead and treats as its own sentient thing. They revere this as a sort of symbiosis between the two of them that allows them to access some sort of neural pathway or the spore network. They access the spore network.
I was actually like
from Star Trek
Discovery. I was just gonna go there. Like, I was just gonna go there because I was reading it at the same time we were watching Discovery. And like the parallels between what they were talking about in terms of the way that Ohan navigates and the way that the spore drive worked were remarkably similar.
Yeah.
So that was kind of crazy. Cool. Yeah.
So
and the
so
algae yeah, actually yeah. is like the spores too, because they're like the drives run on the algae, which is kind of like the spores as well.
Oh man, Star Trek Discovery completely ripped off this book.
Exactly.
So, wow. All right. So, folks, if you want to go ahead and take the short way to reading this book, you see what I did there? The short way to reading longer. Just go watch Star Trek Discovery. Or just watch all of our episodes of Star Trek Discovery at
that's better.com.
Yeah. Or listen to the book. That's also fun.
Yes. And that is the last of our alien species.
It's the last of our happy crew.
That's the last of the crew, yeah. There's plenty of other alien species that are in the universe that they come in contact with. Uh-huh. But those are the ones that are predominantly featured in the book. Now, we don't see Ohan very much because they are kind of reclusive and don't eat with the crew and aren't social. And it was very, I don't know, it's still weird for me. And I know this is, you know, it's still weird to refer to a single character in the plural they. But it was interesting to see that kind of play out. I thought it was kind of fun to have that as a development in that character. Mm-hmm. Thinking of one person as a multiple.
But there are real people who go by they.
I know. I'm not, I know.
Yeah, but it's probably just slightly less strange.
Right.
for someone who actually knows people who go by those pronouns.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and in this case, it was specifically because the individual in question saw themselves as plural. Like,
right.
Yes.
A symbiotic relationship between two organisms.
Yeah.
Yeah. Precisely. It's it's less jarring for me because I work with a whole bunch of students who are across the gender spectrum. So I use the singular they on a fairly regular basis. But yeah, referring to one person who views themselves as one singular entity or views themselves as two entities combined in one body, like that completely threw me for a loop.
Yeah, it's a different thing than that.
It's a different thing than gender identity, and has everything to do with basically two personalities inhabiting one body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was cool. I thought it was neat. I would have actually liked to have seen more of Ohan.
I believe they were one of the more endearing characters. At least that's how I viewed them. Especially in the few scenes they had together, I just had this picture of, I don't know, this small furry creature. I don't know. It sounded very cute and huggable, especially in one of the scenes when Ohan bursts into Rosemary's room later in the book, and she describes them as always reminding her of a plush toy, very huggable. I don't know. They seem to be one of the more cute characters, at least for me.
Yeah.
But I'm just kind of picturing a stuffed otter.
Yeah.
Kind of.
I can see that. I can see that. Well, and it was also the way that the crew reacted, because they cared so much for Ohan, that really spoke a lot. Of character and importance to the crew. I mean, other than the fact that they couldn't actually find out where they were going without them. So,
yeah, I love that. That was actually one of the more endearing moments in the book for me was the fact that Dr. Chef insisted on always setting a place for Ohan, even despite Corbin being just a general jackass and saying like, oh, why do you always go ahead and do this? Just because they never come to eat with us. And like, they might one day.
Right.
And,
no,
that was actually Rosemary asking.
Was it Rosemary?
Rosemary asking.
I just assumed that Corbin was being a jerk about it.
no, it was Rosemary when she first got on the ship.
Yes. So, audience, Crab has read this book like 17 times.
Okay.
The rest of us have read it once.
Okay. I only just listened to it for the fifth time, so thank you.
So, yep.
Hey, man. Work is boring. Audiobooks are great. Get
me through work. I would just like to reiterate to our listeners that, yes, we have a very diverse set of opinions on this book here.
Yes, we do.
I can think of
all right
billions of things I'd rather do than that, but that's my diverse opinion.
That's fine.
But I think we at least everybody had a character or two that they could appreciate on some level. I think.
Yes.
Okay. Right. I liked Sissix was one of my favorites.
Sissix, Team Sissix.
Yeah. Because she was just always
Sis Mary forever.
I was a big fan of Kizzy. I liked pretty much everything, every single scene that she was in. I loved and Lovelace. Lovelace was just amazing.
Lovelace was awesome too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Is it too late to put up the spoiler warning for certain events in the book? Well, I don't know how
long. Haven't said anything yet that hasn't been a very general term. So I was just going to say, okay, if we're going to start talking about the plot now, and all of our questions, our discussion questions, have to do with pretty much the major things that happen in the book. I don't want to give a rundown necessarily of the plot point by point, but we will definitely be spoiling what happens in this book. But since it came out in 2014, I don't feel too bad about it. Because it has been long enough that, we're not spoiling something that just came out. We're not the person with the t-shirt that spoiled book 6 of Harry Potter. or anything like that. So
I was literally going to make that comparison just now.
Well, yeah, it's the example that is in recent memory.
Yes.
Recent?
No, I cannot think of another book series that people have gotten into such a tizzy about getting spoiled in recent memory. Like, name me one book series inside the last 15 years.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything that's been quite that.
Maybe Hunger Games.
Hunger Games. Maybe Game of Thrones or Walking Dead, but the shows are not get into that.
Yeah.
There were literally people on YouTube crying because they had Harry Potter spoiled.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I can understand that.
Yeah.
So we are going to spoil the big parts of this book. I want to do a really brief plot synopsis. But I don't want to go too in depth with it. So let's see how quickly we can kind of plow through this.
Uh-huh.
The Wayfarer usually takes, I don't even know how to characterize it, not top of the line jobs, but kind of mid-level work. And then they have an opportunity because of an agreement that has come about to take some high-level work where they will work for a shorter amount of time and make more money in farther out and more dangerous space. Yes?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay.
It's something that's going to get them some level of fame and or notoriety.
Right. They're going to be the first people who are going to punch a, like, tunnel essentially through mm-hmm. space so you can get to this new place with a race of people that previously have not been part of like the alliances of aliens that kind of get along with each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The United Federation of Planets.
Right. Loosely.
Yeah.
Okay, the central galaxies.
Right.
Yes. We are connecting Tatooine to Coruscant.
Right. So the basic part of the book is or much of the book is them getting to the place where they're going to actually be doing this jump and putting this tunnel into place.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot that sort of leads into the big event toward the end of the book.
And that's the plot. That's basically it.
Pretty much it. A lot of it is focused in what happens in the day-to-day lives of the characters who are on the ship and how they interact with each other and the relationships that develop both for them on the planet, on the ship, and for those who have relationships with people potentially not on the ship.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of an episodic, I believe you said it was like vignettes,
yes.
Or somebody said it was more vignette style, where the mining ship job is just sort of a reason to get to this particular place where this one thing happens, or lots of things happen.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, I mean, like, I really hate to go ahead and compare this to high literature, but it read to me almost like the Canterbury Tales, where the pilgrimage is not terribly important. It's basically just Chaucer's vehicle by which he gets to go ahead and tell all of these stories.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, this is not Chaucer. This is not the Canterbury Tales. But readers, I would advise going into it knowing that this is the style of storytelling that you are going to get. My experience was that it felt like I was reading the scripts to the first season of Firefly.
And is that such a bad thing?
I mean, it's not terribly a bad thing. I wasn't enthused with how it was presented and or how it was executed. I am not saying that this is a terrible book. I am simply saying that I don't think it was for me.
Fair enough.
That is as diplomatic as this librarian is going to get.
Well, and that's the thing I could see. Like I appreciated it. I like the book, and I like the characters, but I love vignette stories. I love stories that are told in pieces like this. Some of my favorite stories are told this way, where you get just kind of pieces, you know, that you kind of connect together, and the bigger plot is less important or sort of less driving. But I can also very much see, as someone who's a teacher and who has to kind of like take multiple points of view into consideration, if you didn't like that style or you didn't feel like deep connection with the characters, or you didn't kind of get into the flow of life on the Wayfarer, it would definitely be off-putting, mm-hmm. to say the least.
I think that was, I'm sorry, Evan, I didn't mean to cut you off. But yeah, I think that was my primary struggle with the text, was that it presumed that you were just going to take off and be immediately connected to these characters. And the first two characters that we met were a slightly insecure and, you know, and kind of just basically afraid to be who she is, Rosemary, and the general jackass that is Corbin. And I'm sitting there just like, oh, great. Like, these are the two characters that are, you know, that I get to meet first. And it, like, and I felt like I got a little bit of, like, a little bit of reprieve with some of the other characters, but as an entire crew, I just, like, this isn't the USS Enterprise. Like, I didn't immediately fall in love with everybody on the ship. This wasn't Serenity. You know, like, I didn't find something that I liked in each of these characters. There were some of them sitting there just like, okay, well, this vignette's mostly about this person. I guess I'm going to hate this one. And that was largely my experience, so that I was high on the characters that I liked. I was really down on the characters that I didn't. And I just had this.
There wasn't a lot to carry you between the two of those.
I had this. Yeah. I had a lot of stop and go throughout the entire book, where, like, I would get to one vignette, I'd be like, oh, cool, this is really awesome. And then,
let's let somebody else talk now.
So, yeah, sorry, I know I'm a talker.
Well, I mean, I can kind of piggyback off that, because, like, episodic storytelling is definitely a perfectly valid form of storytelling, and there are episodic stories that I love, but I feel like you can have stories where the focus is on the characters over the plot, and the plot is more kind of a vehicle to bring these characters to life and to give them a conflict and stuff like that you can care about. But this book didn't do that, in my opinion. Like, the plot, like, the central plot of their, like, the ostensibly central plot is they're sent on this mission to establish a wormhole, basically, between civilized space and Hedra Ka, the titular small angry planet, where the, like, natives are in a constant state of civil war with each other. And it's like, it's a big deal because it's like the first time this incredibly aggressive and hostile species has, like, opened up to the rest of the galaxy. But that entire plot isn't introduced until chapter 8. And you go until chapter 10 before any actual conflict happens in the story. And I mentioned this in our group chat. That conflict is over whether or not a particular character should buy a particular kind of soap. That is the first time a conflict happens between two characters in the story, and it's resolved almost instantly. And that was my personal biggest issue with this story, is there was almost zero plot, and anytime conflict happened, it was resolved almost instantaneously. The only conflict that I felt really carried a strong undertone throughout the story was Ohan and their degenerative illness and the question of what to do about it. And that, to me, was the most compelling piece of storytelling. But, like, I think of stories like The Hobbit, I think, is a quintessential episodic plot, and it's focused on, like, vignettes of they go to this part of the world and do this thing, and they do this part of the world and do this thing. But you care about those characters and what's going on in that story because there's a definitive destination that you know the plot is headed towards, and at all times you know they are getting closer to that goal, and the obstacles they encounter on the way are directly related in one way or another. It's a question of whether they'll be eaten by these goblins or by these trolls, or whether they'll be enslaved by these elves and Mirkwood forever, and will they make it to where they're going? And I felt like most of this book had no connection to the overall plot, and the vignettes they went on were just side quests. They didn't progress the story forward. They were detours.
Well, I would rebuttal. I would respond to that saying that they do mention when the job is offered that it's going to take almost a full standard, which is mentioned in the book, is longer than an Earth year. It's longer than a calendar year. There are going to be stop-offs. There are going to be other sort of stories to be told. And I don't think it would have made for as good of a story. Saying the central plot, if we'll call it that, was resolved, that entire year-long timeline was resolved in a couple of chapters. Because it's like, to go back to The Hobbit and to go back to Canterbury, it is, I'll acknowledge that it's probably jarring for people who aren't really a big fan of vignette tales or who aren't expecting it, that's fair. But at the same time, it's the point isn't about the destination, it's about the journey, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's yeah. Like the main plot isn't the big point. The big point is just these small little side quests.
Right.
I definitely
understood that, and I can get on board with that kind of a story, but I feel like I totally understood that the journey was the important part, but in order for journey to work that way, I feel like you have to care that they get to where they're going. Like, what happens when they get to where they're going doesn't necessarily matter in the grander scheme of things, but you have to care that they get there. Like, you have to be, like, it's hard to be invested in these characters when the thing they're all striving to do doesn't seem to matter.
I mean,
well,
go ahead, Regina. I've talked enough.
Well, I wanted to frame this differently because I think one of the things we talk about when we talk about feminism and we talk about telling stories from a different place mm-hmm. is looking at conflicts that happen in a more mundane way. And I think it's actually really profound and really important that the first conflict was between two women on, you know, out in the world, out in a, you know, one who was completely new to the community and in a situation where she was really just trying to figure herself out. And the other character was, you know, kind of loosely trying to take advantage of her, you know, not in a really overt or horrible way, but in a more subtle sort of female driven thing, like, oh, we're buddies, you're going to do this, right? You're going to help me out.
Or if someone's got the bill, we can get this.
Right. Yeah. You know, they can foot the bill for this and this isn't an issue. And I think it's important that we pay attention to conflicts that are like that because we generally don't we want grand conflicts. We want big fights. We want big things, but most people don't live their lives like that. And I think looking at conflict that is more mundane, that is more based in sort of small interactions, I think is really important because we don't do a lot of that and we don't focus a lot on those kinds of things. And I think that just that in and of itself leans this story along with this storytelling vignettes and pieces and snapshots also lends itself to a more feminist sort of point of view coming from the author and from the book. You know, it's varying levels of success in that. Like, I think if that theme would have been carried through in more of the vignettes where we had more kind of like small mundane stressors between even Rosemary and like as she's learning her position or more things like that, that kind of like had more of a thread, I think it would have been even better. But I feel like kind of in the testing out of waters that it was kind of like an interesting and different way to tell this story.
Right. Well, and
so, yes, Isabella, please talk.
Please.
In the interview that Becky Chambers mm-hmm. did with Mary Sue that I mentioned, she mentions that she didn't want to do the big doom and gloom story where they're fighting, you know, mm-hmm. they're not fighting the empire here. They're going about their daily lives doing kind of mundane stuff. They're basically just going about their jobs and also living with the people that they work with.
Right.
That was basically what a normal the argument about the soap is basically what two people would fight about if they were right. living together and in each other's hair all the yes. time. And yes. they didn't really have those boundaries set up at all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, yep. and it's not so, I don't know. I feel like I love the book a lot, and I'm not going to try to defend it, but it's, I didn't have any expectations going in, and that probably helped a lot.
Yeah.
But I'm either. Also, I also, mm-hmm. I love vignette stories and I love self-contained stories.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't expect a threat, like the threat of the journey was enough for me to hold mm-hmm. it together. I didn't need there to be some like emotional through line except for the journey, like the character growth that was going on and right. the relationships that everyone has with each other.
Right. Well, and I want to put out here too, because a part of what happened for us as a community reading this, it got a little murky for us, and I want to address that because I think it's kind of some of the most interesting stuff we have going on with this is, you know, we did have a disparity between reading experiences
uh-huh.
and that, you know, we pretty much, I feel like I came down in the middle, of this whole thing where I can see where Evan and Dante were coming with their critiques of the story moved too slowly and there wasn't enough action and the different things that they were feeling. And also Izzy and Crab's, you know, enjoyment and love of the story and the characters. But it was really hard for me because as we discussed it, I was getting, because I was the slowest, because I was the one who was reading it. I felt like I had been influenced by both a little too much. So it kept getting hard for me to go back because I kept having different voices of, oh, this is terrible. And, oh my God, this is amazing, kind of going on at the same time.
I will apologize for my relentless fan grabbing.
And sorry. I don't
never apologize for relentless fan grabbing.
No, I know. Absolutely. Like never feel
we
bad.
We need a
about.
Shirt that says relentless fan grabbing.
I know, right?
Crab, like, go to Zazzle right now.
Immediately. Hashtag not sponsored.
Right. Hashtag not an ad.
Nope.
But seriously, like I think, and I think I'm going to make the rule from now on especially when we do the books, that we need to give the consideration to each other of, keeping our opinions to ourselves.
Well, I'll kind of mention that's kind of what happened to me with, when we were doing, the Dresden
right.
book that we did. Dante and, Evan's love for it was so much that it kind of just threw me out of it completely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and you guys saw how hard it was for me to even finish that book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And you all saw how hard it was for Evan and I to slog our way through it.
Right.
Yeah. Crab and I both finished it within like a couple of days.
Right. Yeah. And then it was me who took forever. it's interesting because in terms of like putting these series together, we really do need to be the most careful with what we read because the time commitment in reading a book is significantly greater than say sending everybody out to watch a 2-hour movie or even, you know, a 14 episode TV series. And so, you know, we have to be careful. How we come together as a community through that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
lesson learned.
Yeah. I mean, like, I enjoyed the whole community read because I think that if I had to go ahead and suffer through this by myself, it would have been.
I don't think you would have. I don't think you would have finished it.
No. Yeah.
That's I would have gotten about 4 chapters in and given up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I would have been as fired up to finish it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and I'm going to go ahead and I'm just going to call him out here. Like Crab's the really the only reason why I finished the damn thing.
And
you should be. You honest to God should be because I kept saying like Max is my friend. He wouldn't lie to me. Like this is gonna get better. And there were certain parts where I was just like, this is what he was talking about. This is great. And then you know the whole stop and go thing again. It was very jarring to me. Mm-hmm. Right? And this is like I don't have a problem with vignette storytelling. Like Pulp Fiction is one of my favorite movies, and that's nothing if not vignette storytelling. And you can even argue that Pulp Fiction basically has less of a plot than this does, because there's really no like overarching.
There's really no journey in
There's no overarching connecting theme in there, but. I positively love that movie. I love all the characters, and say what you want about Tarantino. I have to go ahead and divorce the person from the property at some point.
Yeah.
But even thinking about this book as a heroic journey, I mean, obviously everyone goes ahead and looks to Homer and looks to Odysseus, and even the Odyssey, like you mm-hmm. know that you have an end goal where he needs to get back home because he wants to be back and reunited with his family in his homeland, and that's his driving force. All of the side quests still kind of relate to that, like you know, his ship gets blown off course and he ends up on the Sirens, and then he took a left turn in Albuquerque somewhere, and now he's fighting a Cyclops, and all of these other. All these other things, like they relate to him actually getting back to wherever this thing is, wherever he needs to go. And I just like I didn't get that. I didn't get that from this text.
I felt exactly like, the same way. I think.
We're arguing over a bar of soap. I'm like, okay, like I get it. Like we're arguing over a bar of soap. I feel like I can go ahead and watch an episode of Gilmore Girls for that. I don't like, and there's nothing wrong with Gilmore Girls. I'm just like that's just one of the things that they would argue about because it's Gilmore Girls. but I could watch any slice of life television show or slice of life book, and I could go ahead and get that same thing. I think Evan hit it on the head for both me and him is that I didn't feel like there was a sense of urgency or a sense of necessity for their particular journey. Like it didn't have to be the Wayfarer. It could have been, it could have been the Seafarer. It could have been anything. It could have been literally any other ship with any other characters. I failed to see what made the journey special, and combined with my not particularly loving a lot of folks on the crew, it just killed it for me. I really couldn't go ahead and get through without a lot of the encouragement that I was getting from Max.
Okay.
Sorry.
You keep going, and I keep waiting for you to stop. I just have to stop you sometimes.
That's perfectly okay.
All right.
He's got Andrew's gloves.
I can expand on that too. Well, I feel like
I don't know if I want to expand on that right now.
Well, no, because I'm actually about to say good.
We don't just bash and bash and bash and then try to love back on the book.
Well, I'm about to say a good thing. I could tell there were two very specific things that the author really cared about in this story. I could tell she really cared about the characters, obviously, because she did do a very good job of fleshing them out and giving them unique personalities, and I felt like the dynamic they had with each other was good. Almost too good, because again, there was very little conflict between most of the characters, and like with Corbin, he felt like such a paper cutout of a grumpy old man that it didn't really...
He definitely could have been fleshed out better.
But I felt like the characters were extremely important to the author, and I felt like the setting was as well. I feel like she put a lot of work into the world building. I think the just the description of these alien cultures and even of the culture that Earth became, she put a lot of work into that. And I could see this was a very fleshed out universe. And I think that made the rest of my issues with the story so much worse, because I felt convinced that these characters could have so much other stuff going on. Like they could be doing almost anything else and be more interesting. And almost anywhere else in the universe, something more interesting is happening than what's going on. Like I can understand the desire to kind of tell a subdued story where it's more about the mundane aspects of life. But this is a universe where interesting stuff is happening, and it's happening in other areas of the story that we briefly kind of skirt around. Mm. Like the stuff happening on Taremi Ka is interesting. The stuff happening in, I forget the name of the really beautiful culture.
The Eliwan culture.
Yeah, like interesting stuff is happening with them. Interesting stuff is happening with the Grum. Interesting stuff is happening almost everywhere except in this story. And that, I think, bugged me even more, just seeing potential that wasn't realized within the text. And to me, it almost seemed like this was a passion project. It read, and I don't mean this as insultingly as it might sound, but it read like a fan fiction, like a sort of self-insert fan fiction.
Yikes.
You can tell the where you can tell that the author's primary purpose was to create a world and sort of live vicariously inside it. That's the vibe I got from the tone. Like this universe is very important to her. These characters are very important to her, and she just kind of wanted to hang out with them.
Well, that was actually
a story.
That was actually part of the driving force as to why she wrote it, and it was actually mentioned in the article. She wanted to write a story in a world where everyone could feel welcome, where they didn't have to feel like strangers. And there is a lot of interesting stuff happening in the galaxy. It could be any other ship. It could be any other crew. But this crew, at this moment, is able to touch on all of these different sort of areas, all these hotspots. And the story does sort of revolves around them and all of their little experiences. Like, there are, like, with the Grum, we wouldn't know about that if Dr. Sheff wasn't on the Wayfarer. We wouldn't have been told about the
the war and the fighting. War
and the, if it weren't for, for Ashby and his relationship with Pei, we wouldn't get the world building. We could have seen it,
I feel like it's a show don't tell kind of a thing.
Like,
we're told about all this stuff going on, but we don't see any of it.
I will say there is a good amount of telling, and there could be some more showing, but at the same time, I'm wondering how they would be able to show all of that and still sort of keep the focus within the crew of the Wayfinder, like within the ship itself. Like, we did have the instance on the Taremi Ka planet between a couple of the guards and between their new mother. But that was still related to the main plot, and it was related back to the Wayfarer, and it led to events, it caused some events later in the book. But it could have been any other ship, but this ship, it felt, I don't know. I'll admit I went into this with the idea of it's sort of like Firefly. That's how it was described to me, and that I was sort of viewing it through that lens, and I was seeing it, okay, it could be any other ship, it could be any other crew, but this crew has its own, it has not only its own internal dynamic, but it has, since it's a multi-species crew, it's got its feelers, so to speak, in all of these different areas. It can touch on all of these different cultures, all of these different problems, and all these different situations. So if it were any other ship, I don't know if it would have worked as well.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I will say, and again, I love this book. It is probably the best book I've listened to this year, which is 3 months into it. That list is not very long.
Have you listened to any other books this year?
I have. I've lost my point. I've lost my train of thought. Shoot, where was I going? What was I saying? I've already forgotten.
I don't know. I don't look like I'm not a mind reader.
No.
I think you made your point.
The one thing. Okay, I will say I did have a problem with some of the sort of background information shouting, like the sort of exposition shouting.
Yeah.
Main character, where it's like, oh, the we're having to do all these random searches, or the Quaylen are doing these random searches because there was this one one species kid who put explosive bots in his blood, or oh, did you remember we heard on the news this happened or this happened? That was one of my biggest problems with the book, but at the same time, I could sort of suspend that and forgive it a little bit. I think the author and the story sort of had to go with more of the telling option than the showing option, because mm-hmm. otherwise this would be much, much longer. It would be much more of a slog. And the entire focus of the book is supposed to be on the Wayfarer and on her crew.
I mean,
I might have made a point in there somewhere.
Okay, okay. Do we want to move on to any of the actual discussion questions?
Hey, man.
I'm not dissing on you. I'm just saying we've got a whole bunch of discussion questions here.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah,
sure.
Shoot. Anything else to say?
I mean, you don't want me to continue saying things because I really don't want to go ahead and turn this into a bash fest about it. So like there were aspects that I liked about it, but I'm not gonna sugarcoat the fact that I wasn't overly enthused, and that's where I'm gonna leave it.
Okay, so I've got a question then.
Sure.
Okay.
Were you guys emotionally moved at all? Because I can think of. The whole thing with Jenks and Levy was like crushing.
I cried.
That was heartbreaking. That was
not even gonna lie. Yeah, I cried for that part. I remember getting very worked up when Corbin decided to go ahead and take Ohan's fate into his own hands.
That was
heart-wrenching.
I was not happy about that. That got me really fired up because Max and I were having a private conversation. And he's like, "You just go ahead and get to this one part in the book, and it's going to be amazing, and you're going to be so full of feelings." And then I got to that part. I'm like, "This was it, right?" And he's like, "Well, yeah, that was one of them, but I was talking about this other one." I'm like, "Oh, yeah, I guess." mostly Lovey and Jenks, like that whole thing. On and surprisingly enough for me at least was Corbin and his father. I was very uncomfortable during that entire reaction, that entire interaction, and it made me question a lot of assumptions that I had made about the cardboard cutout of a grumpy old man.
And we had actually had that sort of private discussion talking about Corbin, how that since this was going to be like his big character growth, character moment. That entire interaction with his father. I mean, he is still a bit he's maybe a little bit less of a dickbag after that, since he's. But I mean,
maybe
a little bit.
Well, he realizes that they've sacrificed. You know, they sacrificed for him to protect him, and I think he realizes in a lot of ways I think he never really felt like he was part of the crew or part of the family or part of the way they kind of saw themselves, and so I think he ostracized himself on purpose and I think he started kind of picking up a little bit of we didn't directly say it, but Sissix takes legal responsibility for him because he's a clone and he's not really a human being. And, she ends up, signing the papers to essentially get him out, but is responsible for him for what, like the next 2 years or something like that?
Next standard or so.
Yeah. So, it's a long stretch of time that she's going to be responsible for what he does. Mm-hmm. And they have the highest conflict between the two of them. And so that, I think, changes how he starts seeing everybody. And I think that that's why he takes Corbin's fate into his hand, or not Corbin's, Ohan's fate into his hands, because he finally sees a place where he can kind of do something that nobody else is going to do, but is going to better the ship for the crew and better their experience together.
and Dante and I did agree on this, the, oh Jesus, I can't even remember the exact wording of the line, but it was, I don't understand, when Lovey was suffering her cascade failure, mm-hmm. and Corbin goes into Ohan's room, and he starts, like, just shouting at him, the whole, I don't understand what Jinx is going through,
I don't understand what Jinx is going through, but I know that the pain that he's going through is very real, and then he continues, you know, this crew has already lost so much today, and I'm going to refuse to allow you to make them suffer another loss or something like that. And then he basically just like comes down and just like stabs Ohan with a syringe that has the cure in it for his sickness. And I was like, I literally like just jolted back in my chair, like, oh God, like what is happening? Because we just crossed an entire moral and ethical line right there with touching someone's body without their consent, forcing medical treatment upon somebody, and that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, that was the part of the book that made me the most uncomfortable, mm-hmm. but I don't know. That made me a little uncomfortable.
It didn't make me uncomfortable. I think
that was supposed to make you uncomfortable.
I think it didn't make me uncomfortable necessarily because all I could see it as was, oh my goodness, finally Corbin has something happening. Even in the other chapter that focused on him when he had been taken by the race that identified him as a clone and thrown in a hole and beaten, and he's literally bleeding and naked in a hole. I still didn't have a whole lot of feeling for him, but finally I was like, whoa, okay, well, if you're going to come out swinging, that's the way to do it.
Absolutely. It's, I think for me, for my reading experience, it spoke to me volumes when I reflected back on it, that the moments that I reacted the strongest to were the moments where there was very real, conflict in between crew members. There had been arguments before, but there was never actual conflict before Corbin finds out he's a clone, and then the Corbin Ohan unpleasantness, and then spoiler alert, the death of Lovey. It's that kind of stuff that really got my blood up, and that really drew me into the story. I think I would have loved it if I had more of that along the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that would help.
I'm gonna rein myself back in now.
I will also say the line. The closing line for that chapter, hello, my name is Lovelace. It's nice to meet you. I wanted to cry so hard, but I couldn't because I was at work. It's the same thing with one of my favorite moments. I was also at work when I listened to it, and I couldn't squeal like a little fangirl because I was at work. But yeah. Problems with listening to books at work.
I sat in front of my house in my car waiting to finish that chapter because I just couldn't go inside.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting that it's the death of a, an AI personality that has such huge impact. Mm-hmm. It just really shows that, at least in terms of the characters and the way the characters were developed, we had to have had some attachment, because here we are attaching to a computer program, essentially. And that's all because of Jinx and the way Jinx responds to Lovey.
She was also a sentient model. She was a sentient being, but a lot of the galaxy, like they mentioned, there are sentient and non-sentient AIs. There are people who... There are AIs who are themselves their own people, but they just weren't born, so to speak. They were more created.
Right.
So it's it's the death of a person, the death of a personality, really.
Right.
Especially built up over however long it's been she's been on the
I mean, and there's, I mean, that's a question that our author is trying to tackle here. I mean, it's an age-old question in science fiction, and speculative science fiction specifically, is like, what exactly makes a person?
Right.
And Becky Chambers is trying to go ahead and tackle that question with Lovelace. Like, she doesn't have a corporeal body, so to speak. One could theoretically argue that her body is the ship, but I mean, like, you know, does that constitute a body? Is sentience enough? And Jenks was about to go ahead and, you know, commit or break what, break like numerous nine laws, like 9, 10, 11 laws to go ahead and get her a very illegal actual body that she could walk around in. You know, like, you know, I applaud Becky Chambers for going ahead and trying to tackle it. I mean, like, it's a classic science fiction question that's going to continue to be asked from here until there's no more science fiction being written anymore. And I thought that she did it very well.
I like how she tackled a lot of, what is it? There are a lot of taboo sort of relationships. Like, it's between Jenks and an AI. And
yeah.
People don't really think that's normal. They don't think that's entirely natural, but it's a mixed species, shall we say, relationship. She's done that with
almost all the relationships.
Yeah, with Pei and with
Ashby.
With Rosemary and Sissix, and I'm trying to quickly steer this over to that because I want to talk about that. Rosemary and Sissix. Yeah. That was my bit.
Yeah, that was my discussion point, is that this entire book was built on the backs of either forbidden romance or destructive relationships.
Yeah.
You know, like, you have Jenks and Lovey, Ashby and Pei, who are the forbidden romances, and then you have destructive relationships with, you know, like Rosemary and her father, Corbin and his father, Corbin and Sissix, and Ohan and the Whisper, which is literally and figuratively a destructive relationship. That's another thing that I thought that she did extraordinarily well for a character piece that is focusing on relationships. She most certainly went ahead and built in some volatile and dynamic relationships in there.
Some very impactful relationships as well.
Yeah.
In certain areas.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was one of the things that was really, really interesting, was to think about how relationships between different species were sort of, it was forbidden, wasn't it? I mean, at least
for the Aeluans.
Right. For the race that
very prudish Aeluans.
Ashby was involved with Pei, and her race was.
Yeah. She had been threatened, culturally threatened, to lose basically all of her social standing.
Right.
Coupling with anybody who's not an Aeluan.
Right.
Yeah, not just a human, just any non-Aeluan.
Anybody not of their race. And so it was really interesting to have that side of it, and then to have Sissix and Rosemary develop their relationship. Which I loved the scene where Rosemary goes to Sissix's room and she's talking about, and she's in her internal dialogue, she's saying, well, humans have this weird thing where they put on different clothes and they make themselves look differently when they're like sexually interested in someone. And she only just realized that she was wearing a slightly different kind of shirt, and she smelled differently than she usually did, and she realized
done something with her hair that she couldn't quite place.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It was sort of all these loose details, and it just was so funny to me to think of, like, these things that, you know,
and
we all know humans doing, because not only do many of us do them, but they're portrayed in all of our media. But
yeah,
here she is from the outside going, "Oh, She's into me.
That's a thing that humans do, right? That I'm now academically recognizing.
Actually being able to see and, oh, okay. Yeah.
What's kind of funny about that is that I have a lot of those moments all the time because I feel like I don't understand most people. So maybe that's why I love Zizek so much, not right. only because of her relationship with Rosemary, but because we kind of got not so much an outsider view, but just like a different
right.
view of all these little like things that, that people do. And it's not so, you know, human centric because mm-hmm. in a lot of science fiction, even the aliens are mostly human anyway.
Right. Yes,
like,
exactly.
We don't get anybody like as different as Sizzix.
Right.
And the way that her entire life is and how she like her entire like, I don't know.
Her entire
way of life.
Her yeah. approach her entire to way life. Of life. Yeah.
Is different.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Her value system is different. Her views on romance is different. Well, her views on
raising on children, views yeah. on family, views on, I mean, just everything was different. And what was great about her too is that there was no judgment about, you know, humans being different. It was just
humans are different. Weird.
Yeah, yeah. And then here's this weird thing humans do that I didn't think, you know, that I've kind of read about in a book. And now I'm like, oh, I'm actually witnessing this now. Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah,
she
exactly.
makes some good points. Like, hey,
there's
sexual peaks when they're the most young and stupid. Why would you do that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why would you trust these people with children?
Right, exactly. Exactly. It really was.
Very, absolutely.
Great. Some yeah. great commentary sort of cleverly sort of written into. Yeah.
Can I just say my favorite piece of Sizzix's commentary was the fact that potatoes are basically just vessels by which you should transport and eat salt and butter, and that you should just get a salt lick, dip it in some butter, and then be done with the potato. Because like, that's exactly how I feel about potatoes. Like, I legitimately.
I understand
your argument, but I still love potatoes.
Like, potatoes are great. Don't get me wrong. Like, I will eat a bucket of fries from Five Guys. I don't care. But, like, I mean, potatoes are gross. Fries are great. I had a friend once who would like just like take raw potatoes and just like chomp on them. Like, what are you doing? This is weird. But this is not about that's not about this book. So I believe that there. I was just really happy that Sizzix doesn't like potatoes either.
Good. All right. Well, we should probably come close to wrapping up this discussion. We've got about an hour down now. So any closing thoughts that people want to make sure to share? Crab, go.
I just wanted to say I was in preparation for this podcast. I wanted to make one sort of point. Hi, my name is Crab, and I dislike romance plots in films or movies or books or basically any media. I dislike them with a passion. I really enjoyed the romance plots and the romance development in this book because it felt more like Harry Potter and Ginny or Sam and Frodo. We'll leave that to the fan fiction writers. But it felt more like a natural developing relationship than, oh, we survived this horde of zombies, now let's go make babies. Right. Because that's what's more prevalent in at least a lot of modern storytelling, as far as I see. But I really enjoyed this. Took something that I normally absolutely despise, and
well,
they made it enjoyable.
Made you like it enough that you've listened to it five times since we started talking about it.
I just love Rosemary and Sizzix. Okay, that was the part that made me watch this squeal like crazy.
Like a fan crab. Like a
at work
crab.
In yes. the middle of the day. But I like how this book took some things I normally dislike and was able to make it, you know, different, enjoyable.
Yeah, good. What about you, Isabella? Did you have anything else you wanted to make sure we talked about?
I think we kind of hit most of the points.
Yeah. We didn't go kind of straight down our questions or even address.
No, we're so hard on getting transitions.
I know.
You guys just blew right through them.
Disregard this.
I'm sorry. I tend to bulldoze in conversations.
No, I think we hit most of our points. So
yeah, good.
I will say that I was very happy that this mate grabbed like romance, because yes. I'm all about, not strictly about the romance, but about interpersonal relationships, and that often involves romance in stories. So you can see why a book like this would appeal to me, but I'm glad that it was like that for Crab too.
Yeah. So. Yep. Yeah. That says a lot. Good. All right, Evan.
I wish I liked this book, because I could see that it was definitely the author's baby, and that it was like, and there was a lot of love put into writing it. I could clearly see that it was a passion project. I wish it had been edited more. I wish more restraint had been used on the amount of vignettes and the absence of clear direction in them. And I wish the plot had been stronger and introduced sooner and had had more to do with the vignettes. I don't hate this book, but I'm never going to read it again. And I will forget everything we've said in 10 minutes, because I've forgotten everything about this book 10 minutes after reading it, including the book itself.
Also, the whole heretic thing.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Oh, God.
Yes.
Oh, God. Why did you bring that up?
Heretic. It is.
I was going to bring it up.
Not a hard word. Just
beat me to it.
I knew how to pronounce that word when I was 6. I don't understand how you can
do it. You were reading when you were 6.
I know, right? What were you reading at 6?
I had an advanced reading level.
So do I. I wasn't reading about heretics.
All right. So, in my defense, I learned how to play Magic very young, and there was a card called Soldevi Heretic, and I had to look it up in the dictionary. That's how I knew how to pronounce that word.
Well, and everybody else is complaining about it, and I'm like, what are you talking about? Because I was the only one who actually read the book instead of listened to it.
Yeah, for the audience at home, we're talking about the audiobook version.
Yeah, the audiobook version.
Heretic wrong.
They pronounce it heretic, and it sounds to me like nails on a chalkboard every single time.
Yeah. And there's a whole chapter where like every other word is heretic, so it was not. What
I find funny is that as an ESL speaker, I'm used to people mispronouncing things all the time.
Yeah.
And I grew up mispronouncing things so much that it did not even faze me one bit. And you guys... like flipped out.
Yeah.
And I just sat back and I enjoyed the chaos.
That was probably my favorite part. My absolute favorite part was Dante and Evan going nuts over the mispronunciation. Or
there's so many other words that they pronounce perfectly well, and it's that's not a hard word.
Audiobook recording is difficult.
Yes. Yes.
You mispronounce things all the time.
Or maybe it's just pronounced differently in that universe. Anyway.
That's my headcanon. Anyway. It is pronounced differently in future Earth.
Right, anyway. There you go.
That's why the Earth...
Because it becomes obsolete. So they
that's
don't
the cause
have
of
to know.
The dystopian future.
Yes.
People started calling it heretic and the world ended.
Yes. All right.
Dante, closing thoughts.
Did you have your closing thoughts?
My closing thoughts is... Or are. Yeah, go ahead. Subject verb disagreements.
Nice.
Grammar.
Yay. My closing thoughts are that I don't think this is a terrible book. I wish that I had set my own expectations properly when I started to read it. And I think I probably would have enjoyed it more. I think upon a second reading, I probably would like it more. That being said, I don't think that I'm going to give it that chance for another couple of years at minimum. I think that the author did a good job of fleshing out where all these folks come from eventually. And yeah, it's clearly that passion project for her. I'm glad that this book exists, and I'm glad that we got to have the conversations that we had about it. And yeah, I think that's about it. It's I feel like this book just is the. It is the definition of mine and Max's friendship.
It really is.
Like, we don't particularly know why we're friends, but it just kind of works.
It works somehow.
Yeah.
All right. On that note, thank you so much for listening. Have you read The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet by Becky Chambers? If you have, we would love to hear your thoughts. Please hit us up on Twitter at The Geek Embassy, or head over to the website at thegeekembassy.com and let us know what you think. We're curious about your thoughts. And where you fall in our spectrum of hot, medium, and frigid.
And just to Aliwan.
All right. And until next time, get your vignette on.
Oh, God. I'm quitting this website.
That's it. Broke content.
That's it.
Broke content.
Even just go from on.